Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. The issue of rent control is again up for debate in Massachusetts. Cambridge State Representative Mike Conley told Channel 5 that he plans to file legislation to address what he says is an emergency of displacement, homelessness, and rising costs.
If our bill passes, nothing would change the next day, but what would change is then cities and towns would have the ability to consider what would make sense for them.
But others, like Governor Charlie Baker, say rent control will not help and actually could make things worse.
Rent control will stifle the production of new housing. That's exactly the wrong direction to go in. What we need to do here in Massachusetts is build more housing.
We want to spend some time now talking about rent control in Massachusetts. So which is it? Do you support rent control? Do you remember the Massachusetts ballot question from 25 years ago that got rid of rent control? Are you a landlord? What would this mean for you? Would it help rein in the ever-rising housing prices in the Boston area? Listeners, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. We have a great panel in the studio with us to talk about this. First, Lisa Owens, Executive Director of City Life Vita Urbana, a Boston housing advocacy group. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Deborah.
Also with us is Ralph or Skip Schloeming, Vice President and former Executive Director of the Small Property Owners Association.
Hi.
Hi. And back in 1994, you and SPOA, the Small Property Owners Association, were instrumental in that statewide ballot initiative that ended rent control. So welcome back. Also, Barry Bluestone's with us. He's founding director of the Dukakis Center for Urban and Regional Policy and a professor at Northeastern. Hi there.
Hi, Deborah. And now retired.
Retired. Okay. Lucky Barry. Okay. So I want to give just a bit of history here. So Cambridge, Boston, and Brookline used to have rent control until that ballot question in 1994. And Oregon is now the first state in the country to enact statewide rent control. And that restricts annual rent increases to 7% plus inflation. So Massachusetts is, like many other states, debating this and whether this is a way that housing costs can be reined in. There are several proposals here. We mentioned the bill from Representative Connolly. There's another one that's a little narrower that's already in committee. So I guess we should start by talking with you, Lisa, and saying, do renters need this and why?
Absolutely. So no matter how old you are or how much you make, or where you live, every person in the Commonwealth should have a safe, quality home that they can afford. And a home is so much more than a human need. A home is an anchor to family, to community. It's a platform for health, for well-being, and economic security. But the problem is that working families increasingly are forced to make impossible choices. Moms have to choose between rent and childcare. Seniors have to choose between rent and medical care. Adults have to choose between rent and
caring. Just because we're almost running out. Why rent control?
So rent control stabilizes housing immediately for low and moderate income people who are right now at risk of displacement. Rent control stabilizes communities by protecting the workers who live and work and play and make their cities and towns great. Rent control stabilizes the Commonwealth of Massachusetts by making sure that tenants, that workers, that homeowners don't have to continually look over their shoulders in fear of not knowing whether or not they can afford to live, you know, in their home month after month. So rent control will address the immediate displacement and affordability crisis right now, and it's the only policy tool that can meet both the scale of the problem and also at the speed at which we need solutions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Skip, I'm going to let you respond to that. It's efficient. It could bring in units quickly, and that's what we need because of high housing costs.
Right. Well, it does not create any new units at all. One of the first impacts of rent control is it stops all new rental housing construction, which is at least a long-term solution. And one of the critical problems is that it may secure housing for at present, but in the long run, over time, the working families, the low and moderate income families, even the minorities, get slowly kicked out of rent-controlled housing. And that experience was very clear in the 25 years that we had rent control, and it was one of the main reasons we were successful in getting rid of it. At the end of rent control, the state legislature gave two additional years of rent control to low and moderate income families, disabled and elderly, and only 6% of the rent-controlled tenants applied for it. So that means all of the other low and moderate income families had been displaced, and that's because the units are taken over by predominantly one-person households, very small ones, by the, you know, graduate students, young professionals. They loved their cheap apartments, and they rented more space. So effectively, they were just kicking out the low and moderate income families over time.
Lisa, I'm going to let you respond, but first I want to ask Barry, what can be done to make sure that the folks who rent control is intended to benefit actually benefit?
Well, unfortunately, I've studied this very closely over 20 years, and while I totally agree with Lisa that we have a serious problem, particularly for working families, rent control doesn't work very well. It works very well in the very short run to keep rents down for a year or two. The problem is two things happened. One, landlords who couldn't raise their rent just allowed their apartments and their units to deteriorate. And so even the older housing stocks saw a decline in the value of that to the families living there. And second of all, as Skip said, it really put a damper on the production of new housing, and that's the ultimate answer is supply. So in the short run, it gives a little bit of help to those people in a rent-controlled unit, but in the long run, it actually exacerbates the problem we have. What I found is what I like is that lots of people are finally realizing we have a housing crisis. And so you're coming up with Charlie Baker's idea to do rezoning, which is good. You have people talking about expanding inclusionary zoning, which requires developers to set aside units or fund affordable units. We have Kim Janey and Lydia Edwards talking about a deed transfer tax to raise funds for it. All of these are worth considering, including rent control, but I think we need to have a really careful analysis of what the unintended consequences of each of these might be. And then we can come up with some real solutions that might not be immediate, but would solve the problem in the long run and not have a lot of unintended consequences in the middle run.
Okay, so I wonder, Lisa, what would you say to that? That there are, you know, it may work quickly, but there are real problems here and there may be unintended consequences that we're not thinking of.
Yeah, so with all due respect, Barry, unintended consequences is actually a trick. It's a smokescreen that hides the fact that the majority of renters in the city, in the Commonwealth, right, so the majority of renters are paying too much of our income on rent right now.
Exactly.
And when we lost rent control, although the deep-pocketed real estate forces were able to eke out a win, actually the percentage that we lost rent control by was 1.something%. We had a mandate even then, and it's important to say that Brookline, Cambridge, and Boston all unanimously voted for rent control. It's important to say that there's a mandate for this, and that actually the trick is, when we look at unintended consequences, what we're not looking at are the actual lived consequences of displacement right here and right now. We have 970,000 renters in the state of Massachusetts. We have 545,000 renters just in Greater Boston alone, and the majority of us are paying way too much of our income in rent, and that's part of a national trend. We need bold policy solutions that will impact people at speed and scale, and there is not one affordable housing policy option that we can use that outperforms rent control as a solution. Oh. And it's one solution among many, but it must be one solution in our toolbox.
Before you reply, sure. Steve, I just want to make sure we get some callers in here, because Pam is actually calling from Oregon to tell us about what they did in Oregon. We mentioned that briefly at the top of the program. Pam, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay, how are you? You're good, listening good. From Oregon. Yeah, we're so excited.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting to hear that Boston and Massachusetts are considering these protections. And I think what we realized in Oregon is that we know that there's growing evidence that rent control, especially when it's combined with other tenant protections, it's really good for local economies and community health and stability and just general family well-being, right? Like, we're hearing more and more that stable housing actually improves mental health, improves general mm-hmm. health outcomes. And so it's really critical for us. At least in Oregon, we felt like our victory has a lot to do with this growing momentum that rent control, other types of just cause eviction protections, really point to that housing is truly a human right. It's not
right. But can you just tell folks here who may not know what Oregon's law does? Because
oh,
that's
yeah, no
what
problem.
We need to know. Okay, just briefly.
Yeah, Oregon's law, what it does is it eliminates no-cause evictions, which is evicting someone for no reason whatsoever and lack of predictability at any time after the first year of tenancy. And then it also caps rents for most renters at 7% plus the consumer price index.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And was that a tough fight in Oregon?
Absolutely. It was more than a 3-year fight on these particular policies in particular, but it's 20 years in the making.
What's the average rent, would you say, for a 2-bedroom in a city like Portland?
The average rent tends to be about $1,300 in Portland. And, you know, we know that especially with all the new construction available, that the rents are much, much higher than that. We see, you know, we were seeing rents increasing at rates above 5-7% in Portland,
mm-hmm.
And Portland in particular has relocation assistance, so that also helps kind of stabilize Portland's market a little bit. Mm-hmm. But in places all over Oregon, especially in rural areas, we were seeing, you know, we were also seeing rents as high as 40% and 50%, and in some cases 100% increases.
All right, Pam, thanks so much for the call. I want to ask Skip, is this an interesting idea here to just limit the rate at which you could increase to, say, 7% plus inflation?
Right. It has its drawbacks. One of them is that the 7% limit is already higher than the average rent increase in Oregon. So that's already a problem, and there are demands to have it lowered immediately, right now. So one of the problems with rent control is that once it gets in, it usually gets worse, because it creates a very strong political force among tenants, which are, you know, a bigger voter base than, say, landlords. And when they're getting $25, $50, $100, $200 off their rent every single month, they're going to vote. And one of the very interesting things, Lisa was quite right, that in 1994, it was only a very close margin that ended rent control.
Mm-hmm.
And the cities of Boston, Brookline, and Cambridge were in favor of rent control. But I want to let you know that in 2002, you know, that would be probably 8 years after rent control ended, Cambridge had a citywide referendum. And we, the Small Property Owners Association, my group, was very worried about that in the city that really loved rent control. We wrote letters to all the different property owner groups to tell them exactly how it would affect them. Like condo owners, if they move out of their condos, those are rented and they're rent controlled. And all of the property owners that were not controlled had super high tax bills to pay for the devaluation of all.
Right.
And the very interesting outcome is that in Cambridge, we won that in a landslide, 61% against rent control.
But I wonder, what do we do when we hear about, say, 50-60% rent increases for some people and pushing people out of their communities? How do we make sure that doesn't happen?
Well, you know, there are attempts to try to just stop evictions, but that is really a problematic way to go. It just distorts what happens with evictions, who gets to live in the housing. So the longer-term proposals that I think Barry was here suggesting are the ones that we need to work on. We need to be able to supply more lower-rent housing. One of the options that our group is pushing very strongly is accessory apartments, which are the name for small-sized apartments built in basements, in empty spaces, in existing housing, in basements, in attics, in backyards, or taking large triple-decker-sized apartments and letting them be divided into half, which is now all prevented by zoning.
Mm-hmm.
And it just would take a zoning change, and landlords would provide what would be smaller-sized apartments at lower rents, and the people in the big apartments can, you know, move out. You know, they're young professionals, and occupy these units.
Right. I want to remind listeners, we are taking your calls. Do you want to weigh in on the rent control issue? Massachusetts is jumping into this debate, as are many other communities around the country. What do you think? Do you support rent control? Do we need it in Massachusetts? What could be done to make sure that people can afford housing? 800-423-8255 is the number to call. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Bob, you're with us from Cambridge. You're on the air.
Yes. Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can. So tell us.
Okay. All right. Here's the deal. Here's the solution.
Okay, Doug.
I know about Cambridge Housing Authority, and they manage large buildings that house people, elderly, disabled, whatever. That model is probably the best. It doesn't have anything to do with controlling what should be a market situation. In Cambridge, for example, what you see is there's a lot of renovation going on, but those units are going to condo. Forget rentals. If you have people that are in need, you've got to have a quasi-public entity like Cambridge Housing Authority or Boston Housing Authority that builds specifically 10-story buildings or something like that magnitude and creates a whole bunch of apartments, and they can establish a reasonable rent because they are in touch with the people, with the poor people, with the elderly, with the disabled. That's the solution.
All right, Bob, thanks so much. Barry Bluestone, respond to that and to the Oregon proposal. Do we need to limit, rent increases, or do we need to have more public housing? Or do we need all of it? What do we need?
We need all of it. And you're right. In Cambridge, we actually have a great deal of public housing, which makes it possible for very low-income people to stay in Cambridge. The problem, I think, that we'd all talk about, Lisa, Skip, myself, is not the very poor. Because we have programs for the very poor, not enough of them. We still have a homeless problem. But it's for working families who are being, as Lisa pointed out, pushed out of Boston, pushed out of Cambridge, pushed out of Somerville. So housing authorities can help. But I think I am going to fit right between these two friends of mine here and say I'd like to take a better look at the Oregon proposal. I haven't looked at it. It has a couple things I like the no-cause evictions. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't stop rent increases, but it caps the exorbitant ones. And if we could craft a rent control bill that had, let's say, capped the increases at 6, 7% plus the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, mm-hmm. which would be at, 8 or 9% per year, I think that might protect us against the really exorbitant rent increases, which would help a little bit, without having all of the downsides that I talked about of limiting new construction of new apartments and also the deterioration of the old housing stock. So I think it's worth a look at. Skip's right, you might worry about how that would be, the camel's nose under the tent and then things get worse. But I'd be very interested in thinking about that. We have exactly the problem that Lisa's talking about. We need a set of solutions, again, as Lisa suggested, and this may be one if it's crafted very, very carefully.
I want to bring somebody else into the conversation here. Mark Drazen, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, is on the line now. The council is the regional planning agency for 101 cities and towns around Boston. Mark, welcome into the conversation.
Thanks, Deb.
So tell us, what are your thoughts about this proposal in Oregon, or is there some sort of hybrid of several proposals that would help with affordable housing in Greater Boston in particular, and Massachusetts as a whole, and particularly help with what Barry has just mentioned, these exorbitant rent increases that we're hearing about?
I do think we have to look carefully at the proposal that's now underway in Oregon and see how it works and consider it. I think there are a number of things we can do. The first thing I would say, though, is we have to do something because, you know, tenants are in crisis all over Massachusetts. One in four tenants throughout the state pays more than half their income for rent. And, you know, we've been without rent control now for 25 years, and we haven't exactly solved the housing crisis through this free market system, in part because we're not building enough. We need to build more, but we can't solve this problem with the regulatory hand tied behind our backs. We have to have an adult conversation about regulation. I think there are a number of things we can do. First of all, we can consider establishing modest and reasonable limits on rent increases, as Barry said before, to deal basically with the exorbitant ones. Second thing we have to do, I think, is consider the right to counsel in eviction proceedings. Most people don't realize that if a tenant faces eviction in court, they don't have a right to counsel. But the results of proceedings when a tenant does have a lawyer are very different from the outcomes when a tenant does have an attorney. Mm. And, of course, the landlords almost always have an attorney. A third idea that I think we should very seriously consider is an idea that's coming to us out of California, and that is for a new kind of renter's insurance. As a society, we mandate or subsidize lots of different kinds of social insurance, flood insurance, unemployment, disability. So why not rents? And the source of funding could be a small tax on landlords based on the appreciation and the value of their property. And this would be a market-based system with the costs and benefits distributed broadly across all landlords and tenants. And I think that's another kind of innovative idea that we need to take a look at.
Hmm. So what about, though, the idea of rent control as we now know it and the lessons that we learned here in Massachusetts, Mark? Good idea, not good idea?
Well, I wish it were that simple, Deb, but it isn't. I think that the type of rent control we had in the 70s and 80s was probably too onerous. And people disinvested, and, you know, apartments were people held on to apartments for decades because they had a good deal and landlords didn't build more. But, you know, honestly, by the time we voted against rent control, I didn't vote against it, but by the time the state, by that very narrow margin, eliminated rent control in 1994, many of the most egregious elements of rent control had already been eliminated. It was already a substantially reformed system. And just because we didn't get it right one time doesn't mean we can't get it right if we try again. And I think modest limitations on rent increases, controls against no-cause evictions, reasonable limitations against condo conversions are something that we have to think about. You know, we're facing a very difficult crisis in Massachusetts. The average rent right now in Greater Boston is $2,500 a month. We've actually recently surpassed New York. And to say that we can solve this problem just by building our way out of it, it's a pipe dream. It's unrealistic. There's probably no agency in Massachusetts that pushes harder for the development of housing, for accessory dwelling units, for reform and relaxation of our zoning limitations on development. But supply alone is not the way out of this crisis. We have to consider reasonable regulation as well.
Hmm. All right. I'm going to let Skip respond to some of those ideas, especially the idea about this government-funded sort of rent insurance. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, actually, the renter's insurance is an interesting idea that I hadn't heard of before. Mm-hmm. I have heard of something that's called a landlord insurance program that would allow those landlords who take what might be considered riskier tenants, which are the ones that they will ignore normally, but that may be at risk of, ex-cons may have a problem finding housing, and the homeless will. If the landlord takes on these riskier households, they are insured in the case of having to evict up to a certain amount of their legal costs, up to a certain amount of unpaid rent. And that means it's a fairly targeted program. It doesn't mean that everybody gets a subsidy, but it means that the owners are going to be willing to take, you know, reasonably good prospects, but that might be riskier. And that would encourage them in a fairly simple way that I don't think is high cost to taxpayers.
And I just want to ask Mark one quick question here. Mark, you know, some of these proposals that you've brought forward are proposals that will take time to implement. But to Lisa's point, can we wait right now? And what can we put in place, do you think, that would have some immediate results to help folks who are struggling?
Well, I mean, honestly, we could do right to counsel and eviction cases very quickly. Mm. We could probably seriously limit no-cause eviction, which I think would be a very important change. We could at least give cities and towns the opportunity to do modest limitations on rents. You know, public policy does take time to implement, but I feel that the situation is very, very urgent. You know, we kind of sit here and we talk about these issues on the radio from an academic or a policy perspective, but there are people with real lived experiences who are suffering day to day. And it's necessary to try and deal with, you know, their hardship more rapidly. So I think while we have this conversation around longer term solutions, it's important to ask ourselves, is there something we can do more quickly?
And Barry Bluestone, briefly, last word here. I read an estimate that says if rent control measures pass in all of the states and cities where they're now under consideration, nearly one-third of all renter households in the country would be affected. So this is a big conversation that's happening around the country right now. Do you think we will see some sort of action soon? I know we've said it's been dire for a while. I mean, do we estimate that we'll see something soon?
I hope so. Yeah. The fact that even on this program, Deborah, you are introducing a whole bunch of ideas that even I haven't thought about, the Oregon type of rent control, which I think, as Mark suggests as well, is very worthwhile to mm-hmm. think about this. I am thrilled, after 20 years of putting out the Greater Housing Report Card through the Boston Foundation at Northeastern, that we finally have people really stepping up to the plate and coming up with a whole range of ideas. But we need to get action. We need it in the legislature. We need it in the city councils. And we need to have precisely the kind of discussion we've had around this radio station today.
All right. Barry Bluestone, founding director of the Dukakis Center for Urban and Regional Policy at Northeastern, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Oh, also, I think that was Mark Drazen, executive director of the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. Skip Schloeming, vice president and former executive director of the Small Property Owners Association. Thanks to you.
Thank you very much.
Lisa Owens, executive director of City Life Vita Urbana. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.